Accession number 14208, reel 4.
Sergei Siganov.
Right.
Reel 4, we're on 3. The events of 1989, Sergei, you know, when the so-called empire fragmented away, I wonder where you were at that time and what your reaction to that was.
In 1989, I was in Moscow working as a field reporter for Novosti Press Agency. My responsibilities were to travel all around the former Soviet Union and report on different political developments there, a greater degree of autonomy, reform in the Communist Party, that type of things. I'd never been to Eastern Bloc countries and never traveled to them, although being in my position in 1989, it was important to see what's going on in all of those countries, simply for the reason that a lot of foreign formerly Soviet republics were on a borderline with countries like Poland or Moldavia, which immediately affected the political situation in the formerly Soviet republics like Moldavia or Belarusia, for that matter. Certainly, all the Baltic republics, because the struggle for independence was on the rise in all those three little republics, and they were following the events in East Germany and Poland much more closely than the rest of the former Soviet Union. I cannot say that I was very surprised by the, or I was in any way surprised by the changes in Eastern Europe, disintegration and split off of those countries, formerly Soviet bloc countries, into independence and more, or at least more independent stance in their relationship with Moscow. First of all, because I was following closely those things, being a journalist, international journalist. Secondly, because it was happening for a number of years before 1989. It was not an immediate explosion. It was rather a simmering kettle for maybe a number of years. Certainly, the dismantling of the Berlin Wall was a significant, rather symbolic event, and everybody in Russia at that time, I think, was very pleasantly surprised and shocked at the same time. It could have been imaginable that the wall would be destroyed by the military forces and by military troops in Eastern Germany, simply because the government would offer it, or somebody would offer, you know, would order it from Kremlin. But no, it was done by people, by citizens of both countries, and in that respect, it was, like I said, it was nice to see, and at the same time, it was a little bit shocking to see, as a magnificent defiance towards the high places and communist high places in both Russia and East Germany. Well, the reason why I say it was not surprising also is that in a communist Soviet Union, being a little kid as we were, we still knew about grievances and great resentment of the people of those countries, Soviet bloc countries, had towards Russians for many reasons. First, because they were forced to learn Russian language in the schools, and secondly, because there were plenty of Russian troops stationed there. Thirdly, because there were a number of incidents and regarding whether military questions or environmental questions, we all knew about it. It was not widely reported, But whenever we had a chance to converse with our contemporaries from Bulgaria or Poland or Hungary, whatever, those things, of course, were mentioned to us. And even being a young generation people in Russia, were carrying the sort of the scenes of the Communist Party government. I mean, the scenes, they were to be blamed in Eastern Europe and all those different locations. So by the time it happened, and by the time one by one those countries began to leave the Eastern Bloc to become independent and security looking, it became obvious that first of all it's inevitable, and it better be continuing this way rather than anything bloody or messy will happen with the use of the Soviet troops. One thing we should be sure of, and I mentioned before that I'm not a great admirer of Mr. Gorbachev. I think due to his involvement, the Russian troops did not invade and subjugated all those little countries all over. To the great extent, it was important not to scare just those countries like Poland or formerly East Bloc countries, but also little so-called capitalist countries like Denmark or generally Scandinavia and Austria, which I think was a very important factor in the international relations at that time.
Would there have been any perception that the Soviet Union was weakened by the loss of these countries? You know, when you think of the Warsaw Pact,
There were plenty of different shades of opinions about what shall we do about Eastern Europe on a grassroots level, or I would say on non-official, non-governmental level. There were people who were advocating the immediate involvement there and the return of all those countries into the Soviet sphere. You cannot call those people just nationalists or chauvinists or whatever. Those people had very serious reasons to believe that it is important. We're talking about security of the Soviet Union, since all those Eastern Bloc countries were considered to be in a way a bloc between Russia and, or communist Russia and the West. And another thing we should never forget is that all those countries hosted a good deal of Russian nuclear weapons, and it was not that simple just to take them away. And again, the fear was that once the nuclear weapons will be captured by all those little countries and possessed by them, actually possessed, there will be a good deal of insecurity in the world. So that was one concern. Another one, which I think I represented, which was an attitude of the younger generation, and the idea was to let them go, let them do whatever they want to do, install their governments and be independent. And we were not as much progressive as just pragmatic, because it seemed to us that Soviet Union is not capable of keeping those countries. We didn't have anything to sell to them. The ideology was not applicable and was not appealing to the population of those countries. A military might was significant, but also very fearful and scary. Therefore, we thought that we were overarmed. We are perceptionally a very threatening nation, and foreigners are not exactly excited at dealing with Russians of the former Soviet Union for many reasons, and for one of them is just the country too strong, too aggressively looking to have a positive image in the world. So my generation thought it is probably the time to to cut back, to become just the Soviet Union of its Soviet Union, and maybe concentrate on the reforms. And at that time we talked about reforms, but with the time being, the concern about just refurbishing the country from the zero point into something different, it is much more important than just to introduce some cosmetic reforms. So the reforms or the changes within the country, it became much more important than trying to retrieve all those countries of Eastern Europe or countries like Vietnam and all those little outposts of socialism, in whether it's in Latin America or in Southeast Asia. That was generally the attitude. There were all kinds of different shades. Some people said we still have to participate in certain economic areas in Eastern Europe. We should probably have a very significant involvement in environmental treatment out there, because Russians were the ones who actually incurred a lot of damage in Eastern Europe. There were all kinds of different views on that, but I think neither one of them was prevalent at the time, and the decisions were made strictly by the Russian government on the involvement or non-involvement issue. And I believe that was due to Gorbachev and the newly evolved a group of people in a foreign diplomacy in the Russian establishment that managed to keep the Russian military bear inside of the house.
Of course, Joe, this leads on, doesn't it, to the breakup of the Soviet Union itself. Did that seem at all possible, you know, when things were fragmenting in the bloc?
I believe that the fragmentation of the Soviet Union began not in 1991, but much, much, much earlier. In fact, it began with Gorbachev coming to power. They were several separatist movements, or I would say there was a strong separatist undercurrent going on in Soviet Union with Gorbachev coming to power. Many of the regions were traditionally very nationalistic, very anti-Moscow. When I'm saying anti-Moscow, it is very important to understand that people of Belarus or people of Kazakhstan or people of Republic of Moldova, they were not upset largely at Russians as much as they were about Moscow's central rule. As you know, Moscow is not just a capital, was not just a capital of Soviet Union, it was also a capital of the Russian Federation. And for that mere reason, Moscow was an embodiment of the Russian imperial rule. Had the capital been somewhere else, it maybe people felt different way. Had the capital been somewhere in Minsk or in Kiev, maybe the attitudes have been different. But Soviet government failed to realize that having a government in Moscow still revives this old resentment on the part of other nationalities that Russian old brother is ruling all those little small brothers around and never gives them the opportunity to develop themselves the way they like, never gives them the opportunity of establishing their own identity. And that's what they were looking for. They were not looking for their independence per se. They were not looking for complete isolation from Russia per se. They were not looking for ostracism of all Russians out of the Republic per se. What they were looking for is just having their own governments in their own places and cooperating one with another. And it seemed to be possible, but I'm sure that Communist Party, the way it was formed, the way it was established, the way it was supposed to be developed by the communist apparatchiks could not tolerate any kind of a loose confederation, any kind of a dismantling of Moscow central rule. It was mere impossible to imagine that those people in the government would even consider that. For them, Moscow was always the place from where the troops will be ordered to pacify this and that area. Very imperial stance. Now, what started to happen in 1985, with Gorbachev coming to power, speeded up with the slower pace of the reform, simply because Gorbachev, like I said, didn't have in mind changing the whole system, refurbishing it completely, but rather just changing it, disguised it a little bit, not disguised it, but I think I would sort of cosmetically change it a little bit so that it would appeal to large masses in Russia, sort of to a system, to a socialism with a human face, the one which has been first introduced in Prague in 1986. So I believe that by the time communists in the government detected that there is a strong isolationist movements, a strong separatism, nationalistic movements in Baltics or in Moldova or in Republic of Tatarstan in Siberia, or down in on the Caucasus Peninsula, in very different other republics, it was too late. I think the perpetual policy of considering all those little nations as a as subjects, as little brothers, was a very mistaken policy. Was clearly wrongdoing. And one by one, they started to peel off the skin of the Soviet Union. Again, it was not noticed. It was considered to be a wrong move. Troops were moved, Russian troops were moved to Tbilisi, Georgia. There were people killed there. The troops were moved to Vilnius, Lithuania in 1991. People were killed there. Troops were moved to Azerbaijan and Kazakhstan, Almaty, in 86, people were killed there. It didn't taught anything to communist leaders. Neither the populist policies down in all those republics, nor the victims of the Russian troop involvement. So, as reported, who I witnessed several of those things, it was clear to me that the country is falling apart and something should be done immediately. And it was clear to me and a number of other people, actually a good thick layer of Russian population, that something should be done immediately. And I believe that what should have been done is the proposal of a loose confederation and allowing all those nations to go for self-determination immediately, to let them do, let them determine what kind of country they want to be, have their own government, have their own economy, everything, maybe just being unified with a formerly Soviet republics by means of having joint defense and joined international foreign relations ministries, and maybe some body which will coordinate economics on a larger scale. Fortunately, never been proposed to the government and never been considered by the government in the first place. That is why by 1991 it was clear that it's either a military might and power or the country will be lost. And the coup 1991 is just a reflection of that situation. Because what happened in 1991 was not the conservative wave as it was described by the foreign media, because 1991 was not the Russian Revolution, again, as it was described by the Russian, by the foreign media. It was a very serious explosion of nationalistic resentment towards Moscow. And the treaty, the Union Treaty, which Gorbachev suggested, and why it was just started to be discussed prior, 2 weeks prior the coup, which happened in August, I believe, 19th of 1981, just showed that if this treaty will be signed, it will still not offer anything significant to all those nations. Again, it will just offer some flimsy promises, and maybe some hope that in the future they will get more and more independence. Now, my idea was clear. I mean, it was clear to me that the Russian government or Soviet government at the time had a very belated reaction. The reason why I'm saying they had a very belated reaction is that the steps and moves they were supposed to make were always late by maybe 1 or 2 years. Usually took 1 or 2 years for Soviet leaders, including Gorbachev, to realize that they are in a very different situation, but they were still dragged by this stereotype, by some sort of stigma of their policy making, and incapable of realizing that the situation is changing very quickly. It would have taken much younger, dynamic leaders to realize and understand and to deal efficiently and quietly with those problems, rather than trying to grasp the essence of the happening. And when it's too late, just to send troops, to aggravate the situation instead of solving it in the first place. That's what happened with Gorbachev on different examples, like I said, from Tbilisi to bloody events in Vilnius, Lithuania. What happened with all the other hardliners in the government in 1991, when they initiated the coup, which failed in an embarrassing way, but also showed the all the nations all over the country that they're free to go now. That they could actually not look on Moscow anymore, not because there is a much weaker Gorbachev and much stronger Yeltsin, who represented at this time an independent line, who represented at that time, I think, a very sensible idea that Russia should be just Russia. Russia should not include or any other sort of any non-Russian areas, and Russia should be contained within its own borders, and Russia should be a helping partner rather than an imposing muster on all those little republics around. Yeltsin represented at that time the view of Russian sovereignty, which was a very sensible idea, which indicated that Russia wants to be as independent as a little republic of Moldova. Russia wants to have its own identity. Russia don't want to see Moscow as a central, not a power, but much rather just a capital of another republic in a Commonwealth of Independent States, which appeared later. That's the reason why I think, and in many ways, it was a wise decision by Yeltsin to, along with other leaders of CIS, to name the new capital of CIS in Minsk, Belarusia, instead of Moscow. So the attitudes of Yeltsin and his instincts were very healthy. It seemed like Yeltsin at that time understood that the core of all the problems was Moscow's wrongdoings, Moscow as a capital of the Soviet Union. At some point in time, Yeltsin was talking about moving the capital out of Moscow into St. Petersburg. Of course, I realized how many problems he would have on his way doing that. Of course, I realized how costly it might have been to move the capital. But I think that at that time, whatever he suggested was a very sensible idea, and he should have gone with it. He should have went with all these ideas and implement them. Unfortunately, once Yeltsin settled in Moscow, he forgot about it. He forgot everything about the Moscow central position and imposition for other nations and little nationalities. And the reason why he forgot about it is the same why all the U.S. Presidential candidates are forgetting about their promises during the election campaign, simply because both Kremlin and White House has something within them which are limiting leaders from doing whatever they have planned before. But getting back to 1991, it was obvious for me as an observer that Yeltsin introducing a realistic, non-aggressive stance as opposed to Gorbachev, who is mixed up and is a captive of this imperial Communist Party policy, which of course had a history of 70-something years. So it's not something you can change overnight. This is not the view you can change easily as your gloves and become a newly born leader. I think Gorbachev had just enough of a space in his political career which he had to fill. And once it has been filled in, there was no other space he could have exploited. And that's exactly what happened in 1991. Because he turned out to be bankrupt, and Yeltsin came in as a non-aggressor type of equal brother personality to deal with his partners in Kiev or in Minsk or in Tashkent or in Chisinau.
There have been commentators who have said that Gorbachev might have been involved in the coup of 91. In some way, you know, what do you think about that view?
I'm absolutely sure that he was. There was no question that he was involved. It was no question that he was actually one of the initiators of the coup. It is no question that he was among those people who understood that it's either the curfew and emergency powers or the Soviet Union will just break up. The reason why I'm saying that, which certainly contradicts to the point that Gorbachev was the one who introduced the Union Treaty, and then why would the person who would like to introduce the Union Treaty would participate in a coup d'etat? Well, I don't think that Gorbachev participated in a coup d'etat per se. I believe that Gorbachev participated in a way in some sort of plan to introduce special emergency powers and then put them on a bargaining table with those countries to scare them but let them at the same time to discuss certain provisions for their sovereignty. So I believe that Gorbachev at some point knew that something's going to happen in Moscow on August 19th. Maybe not August 19th, on the other date. And he was certainly informed about it. And that's the only confirmation for that is that the leaders of the so-called junta went down to Crimea to visit him at his dacha or residence place in Foros. And it's something which indicates that he knew about it and they were just asking for his approval down there. And he got scared, he understood what kind of a monster he's dealing with, and as a president of the huge country, realizing how many things, how the state machine is working, and how humongous and absolutely devouring it is, he understood that whatever he does could be fatal. Fatal not just for himself, fatal not just for the Communist Party, for the whole country. It is as important. Needless to say that through the whole time of the coup d'etat, 3-4 days, the nuclear button, or to put it more precisely, the attaché case, which contained all the military codes for activating the nuclear weapons, were simply put in an apartment house where the major of the Soviet army was hiding away through all those 3 or 4 days. So for all those 4 days, nobody knew where the codes are. Of course, they were with Gorbachev at his residence place, but the second attaché case with a major who was supposed to be with the president all the time was somewhere in Moscow in an apartment house. So it indicates how scary it was. And I'm very sure that Gorbachev knew about the plan. I'm sure that he participated in all kinds of discussions on how to implement it. I think what he rejected was the method, but not the essence. And for that matter, we cannot claim that Gorbachev...